Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is a response from a day for the 8th day of Adar Sheni. Today we're going to take a tshuva from the Divrei Chaim, the sons of Rebbe, who was the grandfather, great-grandfather of somebody else we see, of the Divrei Yotziv, of Rav Yaakov Kutiel Halberstam, who was the Klosenberger Rebbe. So the sons of Rebbe, was a well-known Talmud Chacham, was also a Chedesh Rebbe, and he has a shuk called Divrei Chaim, and the Choshen Mishpat section, he has two tshuvot right next to each other, the second of which is dated Adar Sheni, the 8th day of Adar Sheni, of Tav Resh Chav Bet, of 1862. And this is something we have to stop and thank Rabbi Jack Abramowitz, David Hackhauser, and the OU for including these shiurim in their vast online Torah library, and we appreciate their doing so. I hope we all appreciate their doing so. Let's look at what he's talking about. So the case here was a Dina de Makuta Dina case. It's a case of where Jews have interaction with non-Jews around monetary issues. It's really two Jews arguing with each other, but the non-Jews are involved, and the question becomes how you untangle that. And the question was, one Jew, his name was Baruch, I think, but one Jew rented out, and this used to be a common thing for hundreds of years, they would rent out a right. It would be like franchising or getting a license to do X or Y thing. It would be, let's say today, somebody had gotten the right for a radio station from, if there's such a thing as radio anymore, from the FCC. So in the time when that was a really valuable thing to have, so you'd rent the right. The FCC doesn't sell it. The Federal Communications Commission doesn't sell the right. It rents the right. It gives a license. Then for 5 years, whatever. It would be like, the TV stations, broadcast stations that buy the rights to broadcast TV games, to broadcast sports games, NBA, NFL, they make these huge contracts. So this Jew had rented such a very valuable right from a non-Jew. And he worked it out the whole time. It's called a possessia. I don't know the, Russian, Polish, whatever it was, terms and what they mean, but that's basically what's going on. He worked out one whole contract. He went through one whole contract and successfully finished the contract, and he rented it again. And then, And part of this was a right you got from the Kaiser, from the, the king, from the Kaiser, the king, whoever it was. And he rented it again for a year. And then while it's rented, he's got a lot of creditors. It turns out he has a lot of loans. He basically has today we would say there's a bankruptcy situation. So all of his creditors come and he can't make payments to them. And therefore his possessions are being sold in Erech Ha'ot, in the non-Jewish courts. Like bankruptcy. It would be like a bankruptcy proceeding. It would be very similar to a bankruptcy proceeding today. Now, they do it by licitatio, is the word in the tshuva. I think it means there was like a bankruptcy auction. That's my impression. Because what happens is, another Jew gets up and he says, I'll pay off all the creditors, fully pay them. Meaning in a bankruptcy court, you get 10 cents of the dollar, 20 cents of the dollar, 30 cents of the dollar from the sale of possessions. He's saying, I'll pay off the creditors. And the representative of the Kaiser, of the king, apparently there were some loans to him or whatever, but I want 12 years of that licensing right, whatever it was, of the rights to broadcast NBA games. Because I think 12 years is going to be so valuable, it's worth my while. And that was the way the bankruptcy auction finished. Okay, now the first guy, the guy who had originally rented out this right and was now seemed to be losing it by virtue of all of his various loans that he wasn't able to pay, he said, but I already paid, this guy gets up, he says, but I already paid for a few years of that right. Now, it's an odd thing to say because that's not it, we're going to get to it, but it's odd for him to say it because he's about to lose it anyway because he can't pay off his creditors. He should have probably paid off his creditors rather than do this. But in any case, that's what he's saying. At the time, the second Jew, who's now taking over this right, says to him, I'll pay you also, which I think means I'll pay you back for what you've put out. In other words, this right is so valuable, it would be like, let's say, if NBC is willing to pay for 5 occasions of the Olympics $90 billion, making up numbers. I don't know that's that number, but they're willing to pay that much. So take something else. Let's say the World Series. Pay for 5 World Series in a row. ESPN will pay $90 billion, which I don't think is true, or the Super Bowl. $90 billion. So 12 years of Super Bowl is $90 billion. The guy says, but I already paid. So $90 billion, 12 years of Super Bowl is like $7.5 billion a year. The guy says, I already paid for 2 years of the Super Bowl. Guy says, I'll pay. So he's paying now. His creditors are only worth, $100 million worth of creditors. And he says, meaning if ESPN or whoever it is willing to pay $90 billion, they think they're going to make $100 billion at least. Right? So let's say the guy thinks, oh, I got $100 million coming to me over the 12 years. I'll pay off the $100 million in debts that are the issue here. And I'll pay you the $2 billion you paid for the couple of years that you have. And I'll still come out way ahead. So that's what the guy says. He says, I'll pay you as well. Now that it's done, the first renter, the first Jew, comes and he says, but I had gotten the right to that thing by renting it from the non-Jew. So that's a right that I got. You're not allowed to take over that right. So the second Jew says, I don't know what you're talking about. I got it from the court. And the court was going to take it away from them anyway to pay off the creditors. So you weren't going to keep it anyway. If it hadn't been for me, then it would have been sold. Everything would have been sold. And I'm giving you some of the stuff that you would have lost. There were a lot of people there who were willing to buy it too. And I just won the auction and I stood in their place. And not only that, the non-Jew that you rented it from, he says to him, which is true. Apparently, nobody disputes these points. The non-Jew that you rented it from also had creditors, and they also were looking to be paid off, so that even if I hadn't come in, and even if you hadn't had loans, those creditors weren't going to come and take away your rights. So the money you paid to that non-Jew for the right to rent out this, you know, licensing, right, whatever it was, go to the non-Jew and have a fight with him. He's the one who owes it to you. I don't owe it to you. So at the time he said he would pay him, but now he's saying, go to him and get it from him. And then the first one says also, but I have rights to it because we have a tikkun hamedina b'chazakos hayiduos, meaning the Jews of that place have rules in place. We're going to find that out a couple of times. It's going to come up that it was common in those areas in Eastern Europe, the even though he's the son's Rebbe, he mentioned that Vizhnitz is very close to him. In those places, they had various local rules about how Jews could and could not do business and could and could not step in on others' rights, meaning the halachic system of Choshen Mishpat doesn't specifically cover all of these cases, and in some of the cases, what Choshen Mishpat allows wasn't going to be workable in that particular locale, and therefore whoever it was in the locale, might have been the lay people, might have been the rabbis, might have been a combination of the rabbis and lay people, they made rules about how Jews should do and not do these things. So this first guy says, the rule is that when a Jew has already secured some kind of a right from non-Jews, no other Jews are allowed to step in and take over that right. Meaning, and you can understand a rule like that would be to protect from situations where, in the times when non-Jews were corrupt, you can easily imagine that, and in Eastern Europe, they were apparently famously corrupt, right? And they were drunkards, they were this, they were that. So the local town would want to make sure, let's say Jew A pays a bunch of money to get a licensing grant, that's going to be good for Jew A, he's going to make a living, and this, and this, and this. And Jew B steps in and goes to the non-Jew who rented out and says, I'll pay you double. So the non-Jew will say to himself, why wouldn't I take double? And he'll take the right back from the first Jew. Then you say, well, but that's not right. But their courts were too corrupt to protect Jews. And that's, you'd have a tzakana, a local ordinance that said, Jews aren't allowed to do X and Y and Z. So this first one is saying that by virtue of the fact that he already used this possessia, he had already made use of this license agreement for one full contract and continued with it, he has a chazaka on it. He has a presumption of possession of it, and therefore the second Jew didn't have the right, forget non-Jewish law, forget Jewish law, by virtue of local ordinance, the second Jew didn't have the right to take away from him this possession and this right, this licensing fee. That's what they brought before the Sanzer Rebbe. So his first answer is, we'll get to the second answer in a second, his first answer is, it's clearly true, he says, the second one has the right to this, and he doesn't have to pay anything to the first one. Why is that? Because this litigation, this sale, this bankruptcy auction was at least partially because of of governmental taxes. That's what why the king's representative was involved. There were taxes that had been paid, and we always say, Dina de Malchuta Dina, we always say the law of the local land is the law, unless it violates some issue in the Torah directly. But meaning, if the law of the land is you have to eat if you have to eat pig, there are probably a situation where we say you wouldn't eat pig. So, the law of the land is the law, and the king is thought of in general. There's Gemara Bava Batra and Nandalan Amid Bet that he points to. The king in general is thought of as the one who's muchzak, who has the presumption of ownership of the entire kingdom, and therefore the king made a rule that when you don't pay your taxes, it goes up for auction, and whoever buys it at auction gets it, regardless of whatever the rights had been sold to you beforehand, then that'll be the law. So that's the Sanzer Rebbe's first impression of the situation, that the whole bankruptcy auction means that the first one's rights to this have been suspended. They've been suspended by the law of the king, and it's a dina de machuta dina situation where the laws of the local government, of the non-Jewish government, clearly apply, and therefore it's done, and therefore the first guy doesn't have any claims. Second, says the Sanzer Rebbe, forget the Dina for a second, it was the creditors who sold it. when you have creditors, the non-Jew had creditors, the non-Jew who rented it out to the Jew had creditors, and the Jew had creditors. And they were all coming, and they were going to take it as part of the loan and what they were owed. So once the creditor sells something, and the second guy comes along, and he buys it mikoach hagoy, he buys it from the rights of the non-Jewish creditor, then his rights to it are the same rights as a non-Jewish creditor would have. And a non-Jewish creditor wouldn't have to follow Torah halacha at all, and he would have just taken it whatever way he would have taken it. And therefore, again, you would say that this second Jew is just a stand-in for the non-Jew. He's bought it off of the non-Jew, and he has the right to do that, as the Ramah says in Choshen Mishpat, that somebody comes out of who takes over a power that a non-Jew had had, he has the rights of the non-Jew. And therefore, whatever a creditor could have done by their law, this second Jew should have the right to do. Not only that, in this situation, the Sons of Rebbe says it's even better because this first Jew, also came mikoach hagoy, meaning it's one thing if a Jew, let's say, owns his own field or his own business, and for some reason, in non-Jewish law, a non-Jew comes and takes possession of it because he's a creditor, he's a this, he's a that. So that would be one situation. And even there, if it was done legally by appropriate, reasonable laws, there's good reason to think, this Ramah was saying, and the Sons of Rebbe saying, there's good reason to think that a second Jew who came and then took it is allowed to because he's doing it based on the power of the Jew, meaning to think of bankruptcy in the United States of America that I know a tiny little bit about. Let's say a Jew goes bankrupt and they sell his business, whatever that business would be. So in the Gemara, the situations where non-Jews take things by force, they have no right to, and then it's not dinah d'malchuta dinah, it's not appropriate laws, it's just extortion and it's just theft, even though it might be institutionalized theft. But that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about an appropriate set of laws. There was a creditor. Creditors come, the guy can't pay, sells his business, whatever the business may be, or he sells some land, whatever the land may be, and the bankruptcy court tells it to ex non-Jew. Or it says to the creditors, you can take possession of it as a way to recoup your loan. So the non-Jew takes an apartment building that you own, let's say, and then he doesn't want to run it, but he's collected it in a loan that was a perfectly valid loan, and now he sells it to a second Jew. Who would think that the second Jew has a problem? Right? That's what he says. In that situation, everybody agrees that the second Jew is like the non-Jew, and just like the non-Jew had the right to the apartment building, this Jew has the right to the apartment building. And the first Jew can't come and say, well, what are you doing in my apartment building? Right? Okay, that's the second point that the Sons of Rebbe made. The third point that he makes is, even if this second Jew hadn't been a second level person who just came in to buy at the bankruptcy office, let's say he had been the creditor of the original Jew, of the original non-Jew. Remember, the first Jew rented this right, licensed this ability from a non-Jew. That non-Jew, it turned out, had creditors. Let's say the Jew had been, the second Jew had been one of those creditors. Instead of buying it from a bankruptcy auction, he had been one of the creditors, and the court had assigned it to him because he was one of the creditors. So there too, the non-Jew would have the right the second Jew would have the right, halakhically would have the right, to collect his loan to the non-Jew from landed property and from public property. And this apparently was something that was landed property, right? My analogy breaks down a little bit, because the only things in halakha that you can get from Mishabdeh, that even if the borrower sold it, the creditor can go to the people who bought it and take it from them, are landed property. So we're going to talk about landed property that was very valuable, you know, let's say oil well somewhere. So it says for the Sons of Rebbe, this would be something that was well known because it was a loan that was done be'erachot in non-Jewish court. It was well known, and therefore the first Jew, when he rented out that right, had to have known or should have known that the non-Jew he was renting it from had outstanding debt. And therefore, he had to know that there was a risk that the non-Jew he was renting from would default on his debt. And if he defaulted on his debt, the creditors would come and take his things. He should have known that. So if the Jew's doing it, if the Jew's the one who's the creditor and doing it, he has the right to do it because that's a halakhic process that would have happened as well. So then the first Jew would go back to the non-Jew that he rented it from and try to get his money back because he shouldn't have given his money to a guy who has debt. So this is always an interesting question in not halacha, but also in finances. When somebody has debt, how much do you worry that that debt will lead to a bankruptcy? And then in non-Jewish courts today, in bankruptcy courts, I don't think you can go back to positions that were already sold, but here they were rented out. So that would be a thing even for non-Jewish courts. In halacha, it's even things that were sold, right? In halacha, if Jew A borrows money from Jew B and at the time owns a certain field, and then before the loan comes due, sells that field, but by the time the loan comes due, doesn't have any money to pay off the loan, then the creditor is allowed to go back to the guy who bought the field and take possession of it. That's mishubad, that's shiabud, that's liens and alaqa. So that's relevant to this question because we think that it happens with landed property because loans are famous enough that when somebody buys or rents the property from the borrower, they should know there's an outstanding loan. Here too, says the Sons of Rebbe, the first Jew who rented this right should have known and therefore should have been aware of it. Fourth point he makes is, he thinks the second Jew is completely in the right because he's like saving something that had fallen into a river. Now, luck is that if somebody drops something and it falls into a river, like a fast-flowing river, there's immediate yeush, there's immediate despair of it, and it becomes sort of like, hefker becomes like unowned because the Jew who lost into the river has no expectation to get it back. So if somebody else saves it from the river, they're allowed. What they should or shouldn't do is a different question, but they're allowed to take possession of it because the first Jew had completely given up on having it. So here too, says the Tzitzit Rebbe, that's what it's like because as soon as it got to the bankruptcy court, as soon as it was being sold at auction, there were a bunch of other people who were going to buy it. If the second Jew hadn't made his winning bid, somebody else would have. So when the first Jew comes and says, no, you got my thing, it's untrue because it wasn't his anymore. Once it was in court, it was going to go to somebody other than the Jew, and it was going to probably go to some other non-Jew who never would have thought about giving it back to him, and therefore, the first Jew has no claims on the second Jew. Now, if the first, there is some claims, the Sons of Rebbe agrees, there is some claim that the first Jew could say claims, well, if you hadn't assured me you were going to give it back to me, I would have fought for it more. So it's unclear that the first Jew could have fought for more. It's unclear that he could have gathered the resources to win in bankruptcy court anyway. There are times when, you know, there are times when people go bankrupt, don't always have no money. So times when in bankruptcy court, people buy back their own stuff at a lower price because they're able to bid more than anybody else is willing to bid for it, and they have that money, but they don't have enough money to do it. So it's a complicated thing. So here the guy was claiming that. So the Rebbe says, but we don't have any proof of that, and you already have a deed on Kol Datinus Jewish where they said you can sell it to whoever buys it, and that is what it is. So the second Jew, he says, doesn't owe the first Jew anything. And even the promise to repay the first Jew his rental money, even that, says to the Sons of Rebbe, those were Dvarim Be'alma. That wasn't a real promise. It was just something to calm the guy down, and we don't force him to fulfill that in a Beit Din. So that's the first Jew. And the first Jew of the Sons of Rebbe is clearly in favor of the second guy. I think the second guy has done nothing wrong, and the first guy has no real rights. I don't know what happened in between, but the next tshuva in the book is right to the Shitti V'chayim Chomesh Bar Chelek Bet Simon Mem Tet. So there, apparently somebody got to him and explained certain facts that were unknown. So he says, now he thinks, no, you know what? It turns out, the tshuva is labeled Od B'inyan Kaze. In a situation like this one. So it's not clear to me that it's the exact same situation, the exact same story. It seems like it is. And it seems like they came to him with certain facts that he hadn't realized. So he says, now it seems to me that the second guy has to return this licensing right. And in fact, he got in the way of the first one in terms of the din, as it says in the Masas Binyamin. So you go back 300 years, there's a tshuva, book of tshuva, 250 years. There's a book of Shiva called Masa Binyamin, who says that if the first person has taken something and has lived there comfortably, and if without the second person, he would have stayed. So I think what changed is, one of the things that changed is that the first guy claims or showed that anybody else would have bought this right would not have used it themselves. They would have let this renter continue to rent it at the price that he had rented it. So that's where the Hasagat Gvul comes in, meaning much of the first tshuva was based on the presumption that somebody else would have taken it, and they were selling it to bankruptcy court. But this guy is saying, if the sale at bankruptcy court would have involved somebody else buying it and stepping in for the non-Jewish owner, who then would rent it out to the first guy who would have made money off of it. And that this guy is stepping in on his livelihood, and he doesn't have the right to do that, and that's the kind of thing that Jewish courts would generally, in fact, expropriate, take away from the person who had stepped in and done that. But Sons of Rebbe is not sure that that's true here, because he says, but here that's not the case, in fact. In case, the Masas Binyamin case was like that, where whoever was going to step in, it wasn't going to get the first guy removed from his position, whatever was going on in court, and the second person got in and got him removed. That's a problem. But here, that's not what's going on. There was an earlier loan prior to prior to this first man taking the right and renting the right. So if there's a prior loan, and this second one steps in because of that prior loan, and he rents it and he gets it from the courts, so that would seem to be okay. And why? And the sons of Rebbe says, and there's no reason why the first guy has any claims to it, because according to their law, the non-Jew who was the creditor of the other non-Jew is the one who had now this right, and therefore this renting that the first Jew did has no validity to it. And that would be true in Jewish law as well, because there were prior mishubadim, there were prior liens on this property. And it's not true, says the Sanzer Rebbe, that it's clear that they would have rented it out to him because they didn't want to take possession, because a lot of people who buy things, they buy things at the auction, they want to take possession of it, and therefore the second Jew is doing what maybe a different buyer would have done, and therefore the first one, he thinks, continues to think, doesn't really have a claim in terms of those things. And the only thing is that there might be a takana. So a takana, as I said at the outset, is, and the Sanzer Rebbe pauses here to give a little introduction, Arendi used to be another licensing kind of situation. There are all these words that come up in halacha from the course of Jewish history, where Jews rented rights from the local authorities, the local noblemen. So an arenda situation was likely, they had the right to buy and sell things for him. There's marufia, is an agency right. There was tax farming, which was where you would, I don't know exactly how it worked, because it seems odd, but it seems like you would rent from the government the right to collect taxes, and then you could collect as much taxes as you try to do. So I don't know what that means, as much tax as you try as you could do. I don't know how that worked. It sounds like it's just robbery then, but it really wasn't. So anyway, there are all these various rights that throughout history, Jews have been able to rent from other people, and then the ownership of those is an important financial thing, and you don't want other Jews stepping in and overbidding you and outbidding you after you've already purchased it. So there were many local takanot. They were in the local ordinances. So he stops to say, when it came to the Arendi, the Yam Shel Shlomo, the Shlomo Luria, and the Masad Binyan was a student of Shlomo Luria, so that would have been the mid-1600s, they said that we don't have any specific dinim about this. We don't have any specific laws about this, because there was no halacha in the Torah or the Gemara about a rented right, and or a marufia is another word that comes up here also. There's no specific halachas about marufia and how they work. And there was a Chayr Rabbeinu Gershom, but Chayr Rabbeinu Gershom was about renting houses from a non-Jew, and if somebody's already rented, you can't go and rent it for more, right? You can't come in and say, oh, that apartment, he's paying you $1,000 a month, I'll pay you $1,200 a month. You can't do that. That was a Chayr Rabbeinu Gershom not to do that. So the Yam Shel Shlomo Kedushin says, but in where they were living, Shlomo Luria lived in Krakow in Poland, he said, we didn't accept the Chayr Rabbeinu Gershom here, and therefore those kinds of laws are not applicable to us. It all depends on specific kihilot. So the takanot of the kihilot, the ordinances of a local community, says the Sanzer Rebbe, that takana becomes like a halacha. I'm pausing this, Gideon Rothstein, GROTHST@gmail.com. I'm pausing just to point out to stress what he's about to say. And very often people try to be very legalistic about halacha. Say, well, if halacha doesn't say it's not allowed, then it's allowed. If halacha doesn't require me to do this, then I don't have to do this. So Gemara is saying, I'm sorry, the Sanzer Rebbe is saying, when they make a local ordinance, if it's properly made, meaning the right authorities have the right to make it, then it becomes like a halacha. And it's chamur ma'od, and it's very serious. And somebody who violates, and remember, we're talking about monetary issues, but monetary issues in the Middle Ages, early modern period, were very important, because the Jewish community's financial status, while it was often very good, it was always very shaky. It might have been very good. It might be the Jews were doing very well, and it might be the Jews were doing very well for a whole generation, or two generations, or three generations, but they were never convinced of it, because they all knew that at any moment it could change. It would be like, if you imagine, see, that's one of the things about a country like America, other countries as well, a country like the United States of America, where there is a rule of law, things, even when they get bad, don't change on a dime, because there's a legal apparatus set up and things have to work their way through the courts. And listen, I'm not saying it can't change. I'm not saying there aren't ways for terrible things to happen. I think there are. But there's a certain sense of security, because you assume the legal system works. That wasn't true in Eastern Europe. It wasn't true in Poland. It wasn't true in, you know, Russia, because you didn't always have courts that were working in that way. So therefore, local kilot, local communities, would make rules about who could and couldn't do various things financially. When they make a rule like that, you have to follow it. It's very serious. And the Sanzer Rebbe says, "Kim'ata over yotzei miklal Yisrael." Somebody who chooses to violate such a local ordinance, it's almost like they're leaving the Jewish people. And that's why, not that it's mentioned here, that's why Mesirah, giving over just money of Jews to the local authorities was, from the time of the Gemara, but in, very much so in the time of the Rishonim and the early Achronim, an extremely serious crime, such that it seems like Jewish communities sometimes put people to death. Even though they didn't have the official legal right from the non-Jewish communities, they would do it in an extra legal way if somebody was a moser, if somebody gave over the money of other Jews to the local authorities. These are very serious issues. That's what he's trying to point out. It sounds like it's going to be a takana, an ordinance. So today people might say, well, so I won't listen to it. The answer is you don't listen to it. You're putting yourself outside the Jewish people. And the Maharam in Lublin also is very stringent about local takanot. And yet it's important to remember that not every kihila, not every community, not every town had the same takanot. So, for example, says the Sanzer Rebbe, in our locale, the custom is that even if somebody has been on a property or on land or had a right for a year, that creates a chazaka, that creates a presumption of ownership, and it's asur lahasig givulo, and you're not allowed to step in there. V'chozer al pi beit din, and if you go to rabbinic court about it, meaning it would be like, forgetting the creditor situation that we've been talking about, but let's say just Jew A had rented a certain right from a non-Jew, the local non-Jewish nobleman, and he had used that right for a year, and then he was going to continue. He intended to continue. He was negotiating a continuation of the contract, as it were, and another Jew comes in and outbids him. So in his community, the sons of Rebbe saying, our local practice is, you're not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to step in that way, even though you say, well, I'm going to pay more. Today, economists might say, well, you just let the market run it. But the halakha never thought the market worked quite that way. And therefore, halakha would say, no, we've made a takana. We don't want that happening because it creates all sorts of problems, all sorts of issues, and it costs Jews a lot of money. Therefore, a court would require that second Jew to give it back to the first Jew because he shouldn't have done it. And he says, and old judges tell me that this is the custom year from a long time ago. But very close to where I'm living, I think he's living in Sanz, that's how I got the name of Sanz Rebbe, very close to us, there's Viznitz, and I heard that Viznitz, they say it's not until you've had it for 3 years that you have a chazaka, because that's their practice. I mean, these are issues of local practice. So I say, well, then it doesn't matter at all, because it's not a real halakha. Sanz Rebbe is not saying anything like that. He's saying the exact opposite. He's saying it's a real halakha because that local community has made that decision to practice it that way. And therefore, you have to follow it. And then also about when chazakos are lost, when presumptions of ownership, presumptions of rights are lost. Let's say the first one has to leave for some reason. So different communities have different practices about it. So let's say he has to run away because there's somebody libeled him in non-Jewish court. He has to run away until he can prove that he was okay, and then he comes back. Does that lose him his rights? So there were local ordinances about these various issues, and local ordinances are the ones you have to follow, and therefore, says the Sanz Rebbe, this is clearly a concession to somebody who was very upset with him about what he said. It said to him, what are you doing mixing in? And not clear. It seems to me that this is what's going on, because it says, so you have to figure out in your place what the law is. If there's a specific takana ordinance in your place, that even if the creditor non-Jew, the non-Jew who rented out this right to the Jew, or this land to the Jew, has creditors, and the Jew himself has creditors, and they took them to bankruptcy court, that even so, another Jew isn't allowed to step in. If that's your takana, then that's your takana. So ask, and it's in premise law, which is another Hasidic dynasty eventually becomes the premise law of Rebbe. He says, so you have to check with your judges in premise law, your rabbinic court judges, if you have a takana there, then you follow the takana. And Mistama, I would suspect the custom is that it's a year. As long as it's been there for a year, then it's his right. And then it would be true, and that right apparently would be so strong that even if a court was going to be taking possession of it, it would still be his right. And therefore, I guess it's probably true that the second Jew has been masigvul, which is a huge change from the first responsive. So apparently, in between, they've said, but we have these rules. We have these local rules. He's saying, yeah, okay, if you have these local rules. So he says, even if you tell me that there was a loan, right, even if we decide there was a loan and the guy paid off the loan, so that would mean that he got money for the paying off, that when he paid off the loan, he has certain rights to the ownership of it, such that the first Jew would now have to rent it from the second Jew, because the second Jew is now the official owner. But for all the years that the first Jew had rented it for, says it seems like the local ordinance would require, that first Jew would get to continue to be the renter, pay the rent he had agreed, but that money would go to the first Jew. And then whenever that rental agreement ended, then maybe the second Jew could take ownership of it. But it all depends on the custom of the place. But he does think that the first Jew would also have to give something to the second Jew because this second Jew had saved him from the greater damage of a non-Jew taking possession of it, and therefore he would have to pay him off some of that. But if there were materials that either one of them bought, then that would have to be paid off as well by the other one. So And there's a little more than tshuva, but it's basically, he reviews as then there were borim, there were the court, this had been appealed to him apparently, and there was a first court that had judged on it, and he answers the claims that those first judges had made. But fundamentally, that's where the Tzadze Rebbe comes out. The first tshuva tells us one thing, and then by the time the second tshuva, he's apparently come to be told that there are local practices that would make all of the conclusion of the first tshuva not quite right, and therefore he comes to understand it in a different way, and therefore he rules on it, which means and tells us the monetary issues have halachos in the Torah, halachos in the Gemara. Then there are lots of blank spaces, especially monetary issues. A couple of years ago, heard from Moshe Lichtenstein pointing out that because Jews didn't have full control over monetary issues for a long time, Choshen Mishpat is a somewhat neglected area of halacha, and therefore there are all these blank spaces. So in this case, in these blank spaces, he says there are local communal customs, local communal ordinances, whatever those local communal ordinances are in fact what we have to follow, and that's the way that halacha went. So that's responsibility for the eighth day of Adar Sheni. With thanks to the YouTuber, Jacob Bromwich, David Hochhauser, I bid you a good day.